Welcome to the Down and Dirty Off-Road Show with the fastest guys in the desert, Jimmy and Trent Beaver.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's a big episode today. We're going to have Ken Block live on air. He's going to be calling in probably about 5 minutes. He got caught up with something, so it ought to be an exciting show. Lots of big news. This is going to be a very big show. We're going to have an HDRA preview, Parker 425 preview. We were going to try and have some coverage of the Barstow race, but there just really wasn't much coverage out there, and I sent some emails off. I couldn't get official results, so I think we're going to have to push that back a week until the next show. Just a huge action-packed episode. We're going to have World Rally Championship coverage, and obviously the big one is Ken Block. Just an amazing guy. What he's done in the past 5 or 6 years has just been amazing. I'm excited to have him on air. We're going to talk everything from rally to Jim Kahana to stunt junkies. People don't know it. He snowboards. We could be here all day talking Ken Block. And Trent, he's going to have a special review on the Razor four-seater, the new 900, aren't you, Trent?
Yes, definitely. Lots of excitement going on with the Razor 4 XP 900, and just a jam-packed, loaded show today. Definitely looking forward to it, and have lots of interest going on with Ken Block, HDRA, Parker 425, a couple of product spotlights, and just lots of intel going into today's show, so it should be exciting.
Yep, this season has kicked off and it's in full swing. I mean, sponsor changes, rumors about this happening and about that happening. HDRA has a big announcement that just broke last night. We're going to be covering that. Like I said, the World Rally coverage. And I did want to, we were going to save it for later in the show, but we're still waiting on Ken, so we're going to make the announcement now. We will have race coverage of the King of the Hammers. I was kind of up in the air about it. But we're going to have a live field reporter. Well, she won't be live at the race, but she will be after the fact. Courtney McCray from Poison Spider. Poison Spider is actually going to have a car that they just built. They just finished. They've been testing it. It's going to be in the King of the Hammers race. She will be there helping the team, and she'll be taking notes. And the Monday after King of the Hammers, Courtney will be live on air and giving us some coverage of the race. So it ought to be pretty exciting. We may have a little fun with that episode. Maybe we'll get a few more industry females onto the show and just kind of promote the show as of women in motorsports type of thing. And I think it ought to be fun and exciting. And you don't realize there's a lot of these women that are running major companies in the off-road industry, and they don't get the credit they deserve. So I think we're going to have a show especially dedicated to them, and it should be a lot of fun.
Definitely lots of fun, lots of excitement. A lot of women out there that are premier racers in our sport. Won points titles, very competitive, very exciting. Definitely always provide a different outlook and should be an exciting show coming up featuring them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some other big news we'd had, and it actually broke last night too, was that the Trophy Light Series. Greg Fouts, who has run the Trophy Light Series, he stepped down as president of Trophy Light. I guess the Scaronis, who have been around off-road forever, kind of retook it over. But they've got some huge farm operations, and I guess they passed it over to Rick Johnson. So Rick Johnson is going to be stepping in, and he's going to be running Trophy Light from here on out. I think Greg did a phenomenal job with Trophy Light, especially in the economic times that he took it over. Props to Greg. I think he's got bigger and better things he's working on, and my guess would be in the next few months we might hear about a Fouts Motorsports trophy truck. That's just my opinion. What do you think, Trent?
I'd agree with that. I know he's got the blueprints down for that trophy truck build. It seems like he was in the process of moving the ball forward on that before he took over the Trophy Light organization. Did a great job for 2 years, really expanded. Brought sponsors in, got long-term contract deals with some of the sponsors. Should definitely still be a very exciting year for Trophy Light in 2012. And Rick L. Johnson, who's taken it over, definitely familiar with spec off-road racing. ran pro trucks for quite some time, very experienced in all types of racing. He raced a trophy light as well for quite some time, so definitely no stranger to spec racing, and should be very exciting to see what he can do to further the progress of trophy light this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just kind of excited to see what Fouts comes up with, because for him to step down from an operation that was making money, was excelling, you know, and I wouldn't say it's at its peak, but it's climbing, and there's a steady increase. And for him to step away, there has to be a big plan in the works. So I'm excited to see what comes out of Greg Fouts' shop. It ought to be really interesting. I hope to be able to catch up with him here at Parker. And I think we got Ken Block calling in.
Yep, this is Ken.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very good. A little tired from too much Sundance partying and a bit of new powder yesterday.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. I woke up and checked Twitter, and I saw you had all these party pics from Sundance, and I went, wow, he's going to be moving a little slow this morning on air. But how's the powder up there? I know you got you have those new DC boards that just came out. How are those treating you?
They're treating me really well. It's been kind of a crappy snow season, I think, everywhere in the western states this year. But we got about a foot and a half the last few days. So, it's been really good and a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know it seems like snow's been hurting all over the country. I was back in Minnesota for 2 weeks over Christmas, and I love going back there and being able to snowmobile and just raise all kinds of hell, and I wasn't able to do it because there was no snow on the ground. It was just dead cornfields.
Yeah, it's actually amazing that finally yesterday it started looking like how it's supposed to look in late November. So, been a very weird year, but we're just happy to have some fresh powder and have the mountain more filled in.
Yeah, absolutely. So you you just got done wrapping up shooting some Octane Academy stuff for Ford, and I know it's going on TV, and I don't know how much you're able to say about it just because it hasn't aired yet. But what can you tell us about it? And was there some pretty good talent out of these kids that actually got picked to be on the show?
Yeah, well. You know, Octane Academy is a TV series with Fuel TV that Ford's doing, and the idea is to, you know, put some contestants through the ringer to try and determine who could be, you know, a good potential driver. So, my camp, I think we had a couple thousand submissions of videos of kids that wanted to be in it, and we had to pick eight, which wasn't very easy. And, the eight came out. We did my camp out in Utah, some up on the snow and some out at Miller Motorsports Park, and turned out really well. We ended up with eight really talented kids, and unfortunately there's got to be a winner, but the final two that went through the last couple competitions were both really talented, and they ended up being half a second apart on the final competition, which was great to see, and we ended up with a good winner that'll move on to a final match that'll be the winners from mine, Vaughn, Deegan, and Tanner's camps all into one final camp to see who comes out an overall winner.
That'll be exciting. I'm kind of anxious to see it aired because I've talked to some friends at Ford and stuff like that, and it's kind of, they can tell you only so much because it hasn't aired yet, and I think it ought to be real exciting to watch on TV once it finally does air.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. I mean, I had some ideas for lots of different challenges, and unfortunately, their legal department deemed them a little too dangerous, so we still ended up with some good challenges, and the kid that won a Ford Fiesta, so he was super stoked, and it's great to see Ford, you know, being so interactive with, you know, us drivers and putting together a show like this and actually, you know, putting together a prize package like a car for each one of these winners. So it's been really a fun process, and it was fun to do this Octane Academy up here, you know, where I live in Utah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's kind of go back to the beginning and give everybody just a little information on how you started. I mean, a lot of people know, affiliate Ken Block with DC Shoes, but how did that all get started back way back when? And I think, what was it, you and Damon Way were the ones that started DC Shoes?
Yeah, I grew up skateboarding and snowboarding and riding motocross, and I was fairly good at all of them, but never good enough to be a pro. So I realized that in my, when I was around 19 or 20, I decided I better go back to school. So I went back and studied illustration and graphic arts, and that's where I met Damon Way, who's Danny Way's brother. And, we became really good friends, and because of my graphic arts experience, we started making T-shirts and then apparel and all that. And we had a couple small companies that ended up doing really well. And then we started DC Shoes because we saw an opportunity in the market to make something different and better. And that brand just blew up. So we sold off everything else we were doing and changed our company name to DC Shoes. And it just, exploded. For about 10 years, and we sold it in 2004 to Quiksilver.
Awesome. And now how, going from DC Shoes, and I know you said you've ridden motocross, snowboarded, skateboarded, you've kind of done a little bit of everything. How did you get into rally cars? I mean, I know Travis, Travis is a DC athlete, and he's done rally and stuff, but, at that point you could probably have done anything. I mean, what hooked you into rally?
Well, I've been a fan of rally since I was a little kid. I've always loved cars and car design, and rally was just the one motorsport that really inspired me. It was just, out of everything out there, that was just the one thing that involved cars that I just absolutely loved. But I always thought it was a European-only sport. I had no idea that there was an actual championship and really great events here in the States. So in 2004... Travis Pastrana started doing a few events of the championship here in the States, and because I was in the moto industry with DC, I was seeing these press releases about him coming out of him racing rally. So it just woke me up to the fact that I could actually go do this in the States. So I contacted that team that was doing Travis's car and said, hey, I'd like to go try this. I'd like to actually go race with Travis, because he was, one of DC's top athletes. And they said, yeah, come on, we'll put you in a school. I went to a school named Team O'Neill in New Hampshire, and I ended up being a lot better at it than I thought I would be. So I entered the Rally America Championship that year. It was 2005. And I actually ended up beating Travis in the championship that year. I think I got fourth and he got fifth. That was the only year that I actually beat Travis in the championship. Because he just stepped it up and actually turned out to be, an even better driver than I was. So, but it was incredibly fun, and it's been just really a dream come true. Because I was a big WRC fan when I was a kid, and now to actually be able to go race in the WRC a couple times a year is just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, not only the rally stuff, but you've done some pretty nutty stuff for, stunt junkies and. I remember seeing a video of you, like, in New Zealand, jumping your car and overshooting the landing and stuff. And, how does all these stunts and everything, how did you get involved in that? I mean, it's similar to rally, but it's, totally taking it to a different level.
Well, all that really roots from the fact that I grew up, in skateboarding, snowboarding, motocross, all that stuff. I grew up going out and having fun doing those activities. Like, I never competed in a skateboard competition, but I skateboarded all the time. Same with snowboarding. Actually, I did compete in a couple of snowboard contests and motocross. I'd race three times. I mean, I practiced three times a week and occasionally race on the weekend. So, all those sports, you just are out enjoying yourself with these, great forms of self-entertainment. But with rally, it was quite the opposite. The only time that you're really in the car is when it's very serious and it's for competition or you're doing testing. So I always wanted to take the cars out and do something different with them and have fun with them as opposed to only racing them. So really, we just started messing around with doing some videos and making highlight videos of the racing, and then trying to do a couple other small things with it. And you know, DC was putting these on the internet, on YouTube, on their website, and we were getting a huge response from it. So it just kind of spurred me on to keep trying to come up with different ideas, and DC really enjoyed it because it was good exposure. So it just kind of snowballed from there. And then once we put out the first Gymkhana video, that was the first one to really go really big in the viral video world. We'd had to keep up a couple others, like the Sub Junkies Jump and the New Zealand Snow Park, that had done pretty well. But once I started doing the Gymkhana videos, that's when it really blew up.
Yeah, it totally blew up. And I mean, it's like, I just, you know, everybody's seen the fourth one that just now came out, and you know, the Hollywood mega commercial. And I ask you, where do you go from here as far as the Gymkhana series goes? Because you kind of blew the roof off the thing in this last one, literally.
Yeah, it's getting more and more difficult. You know, it's a car, so I can't kickflip it. So I'm kind of limited on what I can do with it. But, you know, that's part of the challenge, and that's part of the fun for me every year, to try and come up with these different things. And I still have, honestly, 4 or 5 really good ideas that we could do. Every year it's a matter of, you know, making sure everything can work, making sure we can do everything that I want to do, and do it in the proper time frame that makes sense for DC and their budgets. So it's a huge challenge every year, but it's something that's really fun. I'm a very lucky bastard that I get to do this stuff, but I truly appreciate it.
Yeah. Trent, didn't you have a question for him about the Gymkhana?
Yeah, I definitely did. I know it definitely is something that takes a long process. It's not something that you can go and hammer out in one afternoon. How long from start to finish does it take for the production of a Gymkhana teaser video that we see online? And what all goes into it?
Well, the production itself is what actually takes the longest. The driving itself doesn't really take all that long. And like the last video, Gymkhana 4, I did that video in the least amount of takes. Even though it was one of the hardest ones that we've done, I did it in the least amount of takes. Some of that stuff's really first try. So the driving part's the easiest part sort of for me. It's the production side of everything that takes so long. Like Gymkhana 4 there took 6 days of filming. And it's just that, you know, we set up to do one shot, and it takes a production crew several hours just to set everything up, get everybody in place, make sure everything's correct. And sometimes I'll even do something, and I'll go to see the playback from all the video, and I won't be happy with the shots that they got, so we'll have to go back and do it again. And that's just the reality of what it takes to get all those shots like that. I'm trying to produce the best video of some of the best car action possible, and if I'm not happy with it, well, we got to do it again. So it's a lot of fun, though. It is a huge process that goes into doing all that, but it really is a genuinely amazing process and a lot of fun, so I can't complain whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I was just going to say, you and Travis have been really kind of become ambassadors of the sport here in the United States. And before you guys were racing Rally, I'm sure there was some hardcore motorsports guys and stuff that were, you know, aware of Rally. But now that it's in the X Games and stuff like that, it's really blown up, and you know, it's given you opportunities to go to Europe and things like that. And you know, I mean, what do you credit? You know, how massive this the sport of rally has become in the United States.
Well, you know, the thing is, rally, kind of like soccer, it's big everywhere, but in the United States, you know, Formula One and World Rally are really two of the biggest forms of motorsport in the world, really Formula One being the first, and then MotoGP and World Rally being the second as far as the reach worldwide. But like I said, you know, it's really much bigger outside of the States than here. So it's been sort of an interesting thing, you know, here kind of seeing it grow, because when Travis and I started, you know, was a lot smaller and a lot less recognized than it is today. But, you know, I really got to attribute a lot to Travis Pastrana. You know, his name and his likeness and what he does just brings so much attention. But as we were racing in Rally America for those years, and then as it started to come to X Games, it really brought a lot more attention to the sport of rally in the States than it ever had in the past. So I'm really stoked about that. It's been sort of an amazing process to watch where it's gone from in 2005 to now. It's the fan base and how many more people understand the sport of rally and what we do here in the States has just changed dramatically. And I think it's very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's, you know, the way it's blown up here, you know, it gave you the opportunity to go to Europe and race the World Rally Championship, was just as amazing. And I think you had a quote a while back that was, there's been more Americans walk on the moon than has actually scored points in World Rally, you know, competition. And I mean, why do you think it's so hard? Is there like an entry barrier there for Americans to go over there and drive? I mean, obviously we've got the talent. I mean, I can name, you know, probably 5 or 10 guys, you know, that given the right equipment and, you know, in a certain amount of time could be competitive over there. What do you think is makes it so hard for an American to go over there and actually compete?
Well, there's several problems. Yeah, there's lots of guys here with the talent. The problem is the experience. So we have a good championship here in the States, but the level of the competitors and the level of what it takes to run the championship is just different here than, say, Finland or France, you know, or England. You know, especially Scandinavia, those drivers grow up on loose surfaces. You know, a lot of the roads that these people live on and, you know, out in the country are snow covered in the winter and gravel in the summer. So they just grow up, you know, more of them in these types of conditions. And also with rally being so much bigger than here, like they're constantly exposed to it. Whereas, you know, here in the past, you know, up until just the past couple of years, they're, you know, the young kids just aren't exposed to it. And really probably the most fundamental part of it also is, you know, you can take any one of us. You know, there's tons of, you know, amazing drivers in the States. But one of the most important things about rally is the pace notes that you have to make while driving these roads. And they have to be perfect. You have to be able to make these notes so that you can go as fast as possible down the stage and also know where the gotchas are and where the dangerous spots are. And that's really, like, probably one of my biggest weaknesses is that, you know, coming from the States, we don't do this two-pass recce where you learn the notes as a national competitor and then it's easier to transfer to the WRC. Whereas in Finland and England, a lot of these other countries, they learn that much earlier in their careers. Therefore, they're able to identify the roads and make these notes, you know, much better. So it was really hard going to the WRC with so little experience in writing those notes, and then I have to go compete against guys like Sebastian Loeb and Petter Solberg that have been doing this for so long. Even someone like Matthew Wilson, who's consistently in the top 10 but up near the 10th spot range, he's been, you know, racing WRC cars and making these notes longer than I've even been racing a rally car. So it's really tough competition, and like I said, a lot of drivers could jump in the car and drive, but it's the intricacies of what makes rally unique is what makes it also really, really hard.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, at least people in the off-road community this year noticed it with Dakar, because I think a lot of the note-taking and stuff, I wouldn't say it's similar, but it's a different thing than drivers here in the States, at least guys on the off-road side of things have to deal with. You know, we have a GPS, we go around the course beforehand, we have, you know, we upload all the info in and it shows us all the corners and, you know, and the bad elevation changes and stuff like that. And you know, Robbie Gordon did very well at Dakar this year, but you know, it's a different thing. I mean, he can be the fastest driver in the world, but you know, these Mini Coopers beat him because, you know, of just intricacies, like as you put, you know, it's just kind of amazing.
Yep. It's one thing that, you know, makes this sport very, very challenging and very, very difficult. But at the end of the day, it you can go so much faster down a stage when you have a co-driver sitting next to you and you have the notes for every corner, you know, how sharp they are, if they tighten or if they open or if they open into a big jump, you know, or if that jump's dangerous, you know, you need to put a caution on it. It's amazing how much accuracy we can put in there, but also if you get, you know, one note wrong over 300 miles of notes for a weekend, that one note can put you off the road and end the rally, which has happened to me several times in the WRC because, you know, I just don't have the experience. But that's why I'm there and doing the things that I'm doing so that I can get it, that experience.
Yeah, and how did you get hooked up with Alex? He's been with you for quite a while, and, I mean, I know you guys have, you know, are really good friends. I mean, how did he come into the program, and, you know, how has he benefited you as being a, you know, being your co-driver?
Well, I got put with Alex in 2005 and only my third rally. He came highly recommended from inside the team. My first couple of rallies were actually done with Travis Pastrana's co-driver sitting next to me, but obviously that was done when, you know, Travis wasn't actually at the events. But so as we started to do more and more events together, I couldn't keep using his co-driver. So Alex was a very highly respected co-driver here in the States and didn't have a ride at that time, so I tried him out for an event or two, and we worked quite well together, so he's been with me ever since.
Yeah. Now, your program here in the States, it's mainly based out of Park City. When you do run the World Rally events, who handles your program over there? Is it M-Sport?
Yeah, M-Sport is the team that Ford hires to run their WRC program. So they run the factory cars, the two factory cars, and then they run a bunch of customer cars. So even though I'm actually a factory driver for Ford in the States, you know, all my budget comes out of the States, so I am actually a customer when it comes to the WRC. So, you know, it's a great program that Malcolm Wilson has set up. He works great with us. You know, he really has good equipment and good people behind him, so we just show up to the event. He's got the recce cars, he's got the race cars, and a good team of people around him so that we can go out and enjoy the event and do the best that we can.
Yeah, what are your plans for this year? Are you going to try and do some World Rally events, or are you going to stick with more of the American events this year, or what's the plans?
We don't have our schedule finalized yet. Still dealing with trying to move events around and budgets and some scheduling stuff. So I will be doing, though, the Global Rallycross Championship here in the States. I'm also going to continue doing some Gymkhana demos, we call them, the Gymkhana World Tour. So that will be going to, I think, five different countries this year. Last year we did Austria, Los Angeles, and Melbourne, Australia, and this year it looks like it's going to be a bunch of new places, which is actually very exciting. But although we can't announce anything for a couple of weeks because we're finalizing contracts and all that sort of fun stuff. And on top of that, I'm going to try and do a couple rallies here in the States and do more of the WRC. I'm not going to be able to probably do as much as I did last year, but I'll still be able to do a decent amount. So I'm very lucky, though. I like to do a variety of things. The cars that I race here for Ford are just amazing vehicles. So it's really fun for me to have a variety of things to do on my calendar. You know, to be able to race, you know, in the WRC and be able to do these Gymkhana tour events and race in Rallycross and do the X Games, it's just an amazing schedule for me to go out and do in a year. I really am a lucky bastard.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you where you're really lucky, and I'm kind of a little jealous here, is I've been eyeing the Focus RS for quite a while, and I know now there's only two in the country. Some guy in Texas has one that he imported through Mexico, and the other one is you. So you got to tell me, how is that car driving around town?
It's an amazing car. When I signed my deal with Ford 2 years ago, that was just part of the deal. I've loved that Focus RS over there in Europe for many years. I asked very nicely in our contract, can you please bring me one of those? And they were able to do it. And it's just a very nice car. The fit and finish of it's incredible, and the power output, all that. It's just it's very good. It's a very nice, very well built car. I really enjoy it.
Now I got a question for you. You know, and this is kind of leading into some off road questions that everybody wants me to ask you. Your rally cars that you guys run are all-wheel drive. Is there any benefit, even in Gymkhana, of running a strictly rear-wheel drive rally car, or do you think it's totally beneficial to have all-wheel drive? I mean, what is your opinion on that? I mean, it's just, you know, nobody ever has a straight answer. It's, you know, just all kind of opinionated, but, you never see any rear-wheel drive rally cars anymore, so...
Well, I can give you a very opinionated answer. four-wheel drive is just the ultimate way to drive a vehicle, in my mind. I own a rear-wheel drive rally car. It's a 78 Ford Escort Mark II, and I absolutely love it. It's incredible to drive a rear-wheel drive car on the gravel. But the problem is you just do not have the traction that you do with four-wheel drive. With four-wheel drive, you just have so much more control, and you're able to get so much more power down to the ground and accelerate out of corners and or keep control at high speed. It's just amazing. And then for, like, the Gymkhana stuff, I mean, you can go ahead and pull up a drift video and compare it to one of my videos. It's the control and the accuracy and the speed just comes a lot easier when you have the four-wheel drive. I really love drifting. I really respect everything that those guys do. It's actually incredibly hard to take a rear-wheel drive car out and go out and drift it the way that those guys do. But I, coming from rally, I love four-wheel drive, and I love the control and the speed that I get with the cars that I have. So I hope I answered your question, but, yeah, I mean, rear-wheel drive really does exist out there. But it just cannot compare to four-wheel drive in the rally or Gymkhana world.
Well, and how hard is it for a guy racing a rear-wheel drive car? And I just bring this up because I watched your video in Australia where you swapped with the V8 supercar guy. And, how hard is the transition to go from rear-wheel drive to an all-wheel drive car? Because it takes a total different driving style.
Yeah, it is completely different. I've jump back and forth between my different cars, you know, over the years, and doing stuff like that that I did down there in Melbourne with the Ford Super V8. It's just mentally, you just gotta get yourself adapted to those different techniques, and they are really completely different. I mean, I spun that V8 car down there in the first corner because there was just such little traction. I barely touched the throttle in the first corner, then just to try and carry momentum to the corner, and the car spun. But that's just the thing, that, you know, those types of cars work a lot better when you have them straight. The traction just gets to the ground with the weight transfer, and with four-wheel drive, it's more of a technique of trying to brake early and getting on the throttles absolute early as you can to really kind of carry that momentum and drive all the way through the corner and out. I enjoy both disciplines very much, but I'm really, a rally guy. I've loved rally since a kid, and so that four-wheel drive style and technique and type of racing is just what, appeals to me both visually and just mentally when I am in the car.
All right, and I do have one question for you. I told everybody I'd ask it, and I literally had 50 emails on this question. You got to ask this question. Is there any chance we're ever going to see Ken Block in a trophy truck or a short course car? I know you've got lots of friends in the desert and the off-road scene, so I have to ask it on behalf of the off-road world.
Yeah, I really enjoy watching those guys. I've known a lot of those guys for a long time, like BJ Baldwin, and I have a lot of respect for what they do, and I grew up riding dirt bikes in the deserts, and I understand those conditions, but I have so little time in my life with everything that I'm doing, plus a family. I have three young kids that, unfortunately, I don't get to do everything that I want to do. So I'd like to jump into some of those trucks someday, and but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
And I mean, DC has been, you know, a company you built, and now with your, you know, your racing career and stuff, are we going to see a hardcore line of DC, you know, auto racing accessories? As far as uniforms, you know, and I know you've come out with driving shoes, gloves, I mean, that type of stuff.
Yeah, well, so far all we've really done is made driving shoes. I'm unsure if DC will ever really go much deeper than that, mainly because it isn't their core consumer base, especially on the retail side. Eventually, they might. You know, all the team gear that we've been making of mine and Travis's and Dave Mira's over the years has done exceptionally well, but that's because we're basically selling an accessory to the team, like hats and T-shirts and all that, to our existing retail base. But once you step into the technical side, really making, you know, race suits and gloves and, you know, fireproof underwear and all that stuff, that's when you step into a whole different retail base that DC just isn't really in at this moment. So maybe someday that will change, but as of right now, I think DC is just going to stick to kind of working with the athletes and making the stuff for the teams that makes sense in DC's retail outlets.
Yeah. How did this new hybrid car that, you know, everybody I'm sure saw the video that was put together on it, you know, and you can take the same car instead of having four different cars and do all these different disciplines. I mean, you know, what was the basis of that and how did it come about? I mean, and do you think a lot of rally teams are going to maybe go to a vehicle that's multi-use, you know, type of thing instead of, you know, having all these different vehicles for different disciplines?
Well, the hard thing about that, and I'm not sure a lot of people really understand this, is that if you want to go win a rally, it's a different car typically than a car that would go win a Gymkhana event or a rallycross event. So, you know, every time you go to one of these events, obviously you want to bring the best equipment to try and win that event. So, you know, the car that I raced in the World Rally Championship, the World Rally Fiesta, is just an incredible machine that's been developed over many years to really perform the best as possible on a rally stage. So it's a great base of a car. So I knew that in taking that car and developing it for rallycross and Gymkhana would be the right way for me to go. Unfortunately, I don't have the budget to buy three different WRC Fiestas and make them all in work for these different disciplines and have all that money just sitting there waiting around for me to use them in these different areas. So that's where we came up with the concept of this hybrid, which is a car that would basically change to work for all these different situations. So it was a really big engineering task to make this work, but my team put in a huge effort last year and put this car together. And in general, it doesn't sound like it would be really that hard to do, but when you talk about going from a car that's street legal, that races a rally, then to completely change it around and put a much bigger turbo in it, move the whole cooling package from the front of the car to the rear of the car, you know, completely change out, you know, all the setup of the, you know, suspension, brakes, shocks, all that stuff, on top of, you know, stripping everything out of it for weight, like the co-driver seat and all that. It really is a big change on what we do with that car. So it's very cool. I'm one of the only people in the world that has something like this. There are several others. You know, some of the teams in the States do run rally and rallycross. But there's only one or two that run at the same level of what we're doing with these cars. So it's quite unique, and it's a very cool thing for us to have this technology and this very well-built Ford car. So I'm really stoked to have that.
All right. Well, we're kind of winding this interview down. What you got anything else for us? I mean, the future, you know, what's the future hold for Ken Block this year and a couple years down the road?
Well, for me, I'm just continuing to try and be the best driver that I can be. It's a constant learning experience, and I'm really enjoying myself. I'm a hardworking guy that just truly loves to enjoy life and enjoy doing what I'm doing. So I'm working my hardest to have a good year this year. We're to have a big program. And we're also building our own shop here in Park City, so it's going to be nice that 10 minutes away I can have all my guys and, you know, my marketing guys and management guys and mechanics all in one place. So it's the future looks quite good to me. I'm quite happy with the direction of everything that we're doing. Now I just need to have a little better luck. I've had two kind of bad years of luck. You know, my car broke twice at X Games in the past year, and I've had several mechanicals, and I've put the car off the road a couple times. So this year I'm really focused on trying to get rid of that bad luck and have the best experience that I can, you know, driving-wise in the car, so I can put my car at the front of the pack as many times as I can.
Awesome. Well, I got to thank you for the time you've given us to come on air and do this, Ken. I totally appreciate it. And thanks for everything you've done for rallying here in the States. And, I mean, we're all cheering you on when you go, you know, overseas and X Games and everything else. So good luck this year.
Well, thanks very much. Enjoyed talking to you. You had great questions, and I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that was Ken Block. We're going to have a question here, some off-road trivia action. It's actually rally trivia today in the Ken Block theme of things, and we've also got some World Rally Championship coverage. Trent's going to give us the lead-in here to the rally question featuring Ken Block. So what are we giving away this week, Trent?
Well, first off, I'd like to give a shout-out to Bryant Chance. He was last week's winner. Emailed in shortly right after the show and had the correct answer. But this week, Off-Road Warehouse is giving away a $40 gift card thanks to Kevin Knight. He's the manager, I believe, of the Temecula store. Sean Sullivan with DEA Clothing pulled through, got in contact with him, and got the $40 gift card for the Off-Road Warehouse. So that's what's up for grabs for knowing your rally trivia this week.
All right. So here's our trivia question. We're going to run it like we do in normal weeks. I'm going to give you the question on air. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 619-768-7253. You can either call in while we're on air, or the first person either to email us, tweet us, or fill out the contact form on the website with a correct answer is the winner. If we're not, and that's once we go off air. So the only acceptable answers will be while we're on air, and then after that we'll go to those other means of answering the question. There's just been a lot of mix up in recent weeks on who won, and I was in first, and that's the way it is. We start checking emails after the show goes off air. So here's your question: what place did Ken Block finish in his first rally race? Where was that rally race, and what class did he run in? All right, we're going to cut to a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to have some World Rally Championship coverage.
Have you noticed that with all of our choices in the world, our decisions get harder and harder? It used to be simple, black or white. There was only one place to buy your car. You didn't have to shop around. Well, Parker Motor Company wants you to rely on them for making your car buying experience an enjoyable one. They're not the only dealership around, but they're your best choice. Whether you're buying new or used, Parker Motor Company is the place to shop. Stop by today at 920 Arizona Avenue. Parker Motor Company. Deal with a winner.
All right, back from the break. I do want to give a quick plug to Intense Tees. They are the official t-shirt company of the Down and Dirty Radio Show. They're doing a full line of T-shirts for us that will be given out at the Parker 425 live remote. They handle all kinds of screen printing, embroidery. They can do just about anything you want. They can do anything down to custom board shorts. I mean, jackets, you name it, they can do it. They've worked with the Herps, Riviera, KMC Wheels, BF Goodrich Tires. They've worked with myself. They put out a phenomenal product. They can do it in a quick amount of time, and it's very cost effective. If you're looking for any kind of gear for your race team, they can get it to you and do pretty much whatever you want. You need to check them out on the web at intensetees.com. That's N-T-E-N-S-E-T-E-E-S-T. No, I'm adding an extra T in there. Intensetees.com. Sorry about that. Anyways, we're going to get into some World Rally coverage now. I don't know if anybody was paying attention this last weekend. It was the first round of the World Rally Championship. It was an actual asphalt rally in Monte Carlo. One of the two big events a year they run in Monte Carlo. Formula One has their amazing Formula One race there. And FIA also puts on a World Rally Championship event. This year was particularly significant for the event as it marked the return of the event to the World Championship roster for the first time since 08. They've been running it for a few years now, but it wasn't on the World Rally schedule. So this is the first time in 3 years that the big names were back. It was the 80th running of the event, and the route was a route that they tried to kind of throw back to the old traditions of when rally first got originated. It was a demanding itinerary. It was 6 days long and covered 430 kilometers, 20% more than the rally traditionally does. The next World Rally event is in 2 weeks in Sweden. And being an asphalt rally, usually they're a little less attended than the gravel rallies, just because, as Ken was saying earlier on air. We got a call in here. Hello, you're on air, Down and Dirty Radio Show.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
I think I got your answer. This is Jesse.
Oh, how you doing, Jesse?
Very good.
What do you got?
I got fifth place in Group N and Snowdrift.
You are correct.
All righty.
All right, Trent, I've got your contact info, Jesse, so we'll get a hold of you this week and hook up with you and find out what size you want. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
All righty.
Better.
All right, we got a winner. That was quick.
Well, that was a quick winner. He must know his off-road trivia pretty well. So
yeah, well, I know on one of the first events, I got an email as soon as the show was over from him, and I think it was the right answer, and it was just a little too late. So, Jesse Newton, Parker, Arizona, just the big winner for DEA clothing. All right, let's finish off these World Rally Championship results here. First place went to Sebastian Loeb. Second for Danny Sordo. Third, Peter Solberg. Fourth, Mikko Hirkkonen. And fifth, this one, I'm going to butcher the name, so I don't even want to try. It's Evgeny Novikov. But the big thing was his first rally for Peter Solberg in his new Ford. He won four stages out of 18 and finished in a third on the podium. You know, that's pretty good for his first race in a brand-new car after switching over from another manufacturer to Ford. Got to give props out to him. The biggest props go out to Sebastian Loeb, though. He dominated. He won 9 out of 18 stages, and I'm not just talking winning by a second or two. I mean, he was blowing the competition out of the water. So, Loeb's always been dominant. He's been doing the World Rally Championship for a long time now, and this may be just another one of those years. Next up, we're going to have a little bit of coverage of the HDRA race that's coming up, Red Line at State Line. The big news coming out of HDRA, and they announced it yesterday, and if any of you haven't been on the internet yet or seen anything, they just announced very minor details, so we don't have much on you. But they did announce that they've got a television package for this year to cover the entire series. A company called Tampa Digital will be producing the races to be to be aired on television. They don't know what channel it's going to run on. They don't know what dates, but they will be out at Redline and Stateline doing TV coverage. It's promised that the entire series will air on television. They just they don't have any more particulars. Hopefully in the next week or at the race, or they're planning on sharing that with you. Entry list, pretty good entry list, all things considered, with Parker, you know, running the week after and Laughlin a week or so before. Unlimited Truck, they've got four entries. They've got, let's see here, they've got a good dozen entries in Class 1. Class 1600, looks like they've got probably 12 to 15 entries. Sportsman Truck, Class 1400, that's the big one. It looks to me like they've got, oh, let me count here for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16 entries in Sportsman Truck. That ought to be a big turnout for those guys. Class 3000, they've got quite a few entries. Class 9, Class 8 in Heavy Metal. I mean, it's a decent amount of entries, especially with the money that they're putting up. You know, I think if the race was scheduled a little bit different, they would have more entries. It's just Parker, you know, with the amount of entries that Parker commands, you know, it's just tough to put any kind of race on in January. People save their, you know, save their vehicles for Parker. Some big names that are entered, though, Pat Dean, Johnny Greaves, he's running a Class 1 car. Other than that, I'm just quick looking down the list for you guys. You know, I don't know. It's just lots and lots of names here. I could spit out big names all day long. It's going to be a great turnout for this event, I think. You know, it's first race of the year, a new series. You know, over 100 entries. I don't think you can ask for much more with a TV package. I think by the end of the year, they're going to be a legitimate threat to take some entries away from scoring Best in the Desert. You know, I guess little competition is always a good thing. What do you think, Trent?
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Another big name, they're having Ivan Stewart as a grand marshal for the event. First race being brought back, and I think it's a pretty good idea to have Ivan Stewart as a grand marshal. There's 111 pre-entered, and once again, 10 grand cash to the overall winner, and second to sixth place overall, extra $1,000 in your pocket, and that's from Wide Open. Providing that, but yeah, a lot of big names. One of the biggest things I think is a lot of people, like I've said in the past, have their first portion of the schedule planned out ahead of time, but I really think we'll see this series blow up in the fall of this year after everyone gets through with their summer vacation from off-road racing. I'd say should see some huge entries for the fall portion of the race season.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think they're going to pick up some entries along the way. I think it was just Parker's big. Some of the guys that run Score needed to be at Laughlin. You know, the funny thing is they've only got four open trucks. With only four open trucks, you know, it's $10,000 to the overall, and then I think $5,000 split up over the next five positions. There's a chance for some 1600s and Class 10s to sneak in there and possibly take some overall cash away. You know, it'll be interesting to see how this thing ends up, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit if there's one or two Class 10 sneak in there into the top six overall and take some of that money away.
I would definitely agree with that, Jimmy. Any two-day race, there's definitely going to be carnage, having to go 110% all day long both days, and so that may help some of those limited buggy classes and even maybe a Class 8 or Heavy Metal class get up into that $1,000 bonus money for second through sixth overall.
Yeah, it should be pretty exciting. I'm kind of anxious to see how this race turns out. Good luck to everybody going at Redline at Stateline this weekend. Be safe. Don't hit the tree bar too bad. I've been there, done that. Trust me. All right, next up we got some coverage of the Parker 425. Entry lists came out, and over 200 pre-entries for the Best in the Desert Parker 425. I mean, Trophy Truck and Class 1s are just loaded in here. Last I checked, there was 30-something Trophy Trucks, I think 33 pre-entered, and something like 46 Class 1 cars. It just it ought to be an amazing turnout.
definitely a huge event. Like you said, over 200 entries in the drawing for start positions, over 80 unlimited vehicles in the drawing. I think this year definitely be a year. Best in Desert shows that it's the premier off-road organization promoting races in the U.S. And I think it may separate themselves from the competition this year a little bit by adding the Mint and having Vegas Reno as well. Should be an amazing series they're putting on this year. But the entries with the Parker 425 are huge. Always huge entries at Parker and should be interesting for racing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just looking down this entry list. I mean, the 7200 class, the 8000 class, the 1600 class. This is just going to be huge for any class. I mean, to come home with a win at this race, I mean, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to have no problem whatsoever. It's just going to be crazy. I think for qualifying on Thursday, if anybody's going to be in town on Thursday, come out to qualifying. I think you're going to see some amazing racing. I mean, with 70-some unlimited class vehicles vying for those top starting positions, you're going to see guys run harder than they are on race day, and it should be amazing. The happy thing that I've got going for me is out of the 70-some entries, I get to start 10th for the qualifier, so the course won't be so beat up. So, you know what? If I get to start 10th and I can actually pull down a top 10 starting position, I will be a happy man come Parker 425 race day.
I'm sure you will, and I know the first through 20th in those overall qualifying positions, that 1 minute start interval is definitely huge, and I'm sure you can attest to that when you're having to battle sun heading up the wash at the first part of the race.
Well, in the way they start this race right at sunup, the first car leaves the line, and if you leave the line top 10, 15 cars, you actually are on the course and beat the sun. You know, you're in the wash and up the wash before you have to battle the sun. When you start after that, the sun has already peaked over the mountains and stuff, and then it's just, I mean, a blinding, you know, blinding dust in front of you, you know, from then on for the rest of the morning, really. So those top 10 or 15 positions, I mean, I can't stress enough how big of a benefit it is here at the Parker race. Other big news about the Parker 425, Wednesday the 1st, the day before qualifying, the Down and Dirty Show. We're having a live remote at the Casino Cantina. Azunia Tequila is co-sponsoring. Jim Riley at Azunia, he's sponsoring some tequila drink specials. Tequila shooters and margaritas are going to be on special. The cantina has some great food. It's just a great atmosphere down there. They have games and stuff. Bring the kids. There's going to be off-road racers down there. They can get autographs, meet the racers. I think I'm going to have my trophy truck on display. Jim Riley's going to have his truck on display. We're going to have a live remote for the radio show. We will not have an episode next Monday. We're going to have this live remote because it's Wednesday. I'm going to be interviewing racers live down there. Should be a great time, a great party. We're going to be giving away some free swag. Hopefully some Down and Dirty Show t-shirts and a bunch more. It's going to be a great time. It's from 5 to 7, Wednesday, February 1st, the Blue Water Casino Cantina. It's going to be a fun place to be. Bring the kids, have dinner, and meet your favorite racers. It ought to be fun. Next up, we've got some Barstow coverage, and we got some Barstow coverage, and we don't have some Barstow coverage here. Moore had a race in Barstow this weekend. I tried and tried to get results for the race. Nobody could give me official results, and I didn't really want to, you know, just take a shot in the dark and take everybody's say-so off the internet. So we're going to try and cover the Barstow race next week when I can get some official results. In the meantime, the two people I do know that won classes, Rhonda Sue Parkhouse and Chuck Dempsey took the 1450 class win. And Kelly Mather took the overall and Class 1 victory. Sounded like it was a pretty well-attended race. We will have the full coverage on the next episode of the show. I just don't want to cover it without having all our bases covered. Next up, we've got a product spotlight from Casey Highlights. We've been working on this one with Casey Highlights for a while. I've actually got this product sitting on the desk in front of me. Casey Highlights has been the world leader in you know, accessory lighting for race cars, UTVs, you know, Jeeps, pickups, whatever you can think of, even construction equipment for a long time now. The company's been around forever. High-quality parts. Everybody in the world knows who they are. They just launched for the first time ever a complete new line of flashlights. There's three flashlights in this line, and it's just there's some amazing flashlights. The first two I'm going to go over they're small LED flashlights. They're 3 watts apiece. They take three AAA batteries that are included, and they put out 300 lumens apiece. The only difference in the two, one's a fixed beam, and one's got an adjustable focus beam pattern. It's a 3-watt LED KC flashlight, and I looked up and made comparisons. These things are 3 inches long, and I made comparisons to mag lights. Everybody knows what a mag light is. Those things take who knows how many D-cell batteries, anywhere from 2 to 6, depending on the length of them. You can take your 6-cell D-cell or your 6-cell mag light that takes 6 D-cell batteries. This little 3-inch long KC Highlights LED light puts out 300 lumens. The mag light, 200 lumens. This little thing that you can put in your pocket is brighter than the biggest mag light they sell. What's that tell you? KC has been the world leader. They've knocked this one out of the park. There's no need to lug around that big thing that looks like a baseball bat anymore. Throw one of these in your pocket, in your purse, perfect, and it's the brightest flashlight you'll ever need. The other thing they put out, oh, and by the way, those retail for the fixed focus, $37.95, for the adjustable focus, $39.95. They are available on KC Highlights website. I think Jim Connors at Jim Connors Racing has them available, and I think they just launched and they're starting to get into off-road stores everywhere. I would say if they don't have them now, in the next week or two, they'll probably be everywhere. The big one that they came out with, though, and this thing is just amazing. Every pit crew ought to have one. I've ordered a dozen of them myself, so I'm putting my money where my mouth is. It's a handheld KC LED work light. It's got 28 LED lights and then 4 LED lights that are red for a strobe, and then it's got an LED flashlight on the end. So it's actually got 3 lights built into one, a strobe light, a flashlight, and an LED work light. It's rechargeable. It doesn't take batteries. You can either plug it into your wall, and it comes with an adapter for that, or you can plug it into your cigarette lighter. This thing is just ridiculously bright. It's got a 100,000-hour LED lifespan, and on a full charge, it'll run 5 hours without having to be recharged. It's got a built-in retractable hook for hanging under the hood or something. It's also got a big magnet on the back so you can magnet, you know, to your fender or the bottom of your hood or wherever you're working. This thing's just amazing. Retails for $47.95, and if you thought those little 3-watt LED flashlights were bright, you ought to see this thing. It's blinding. It looks like those new laser light bars that KC Highlights is selling for race cars. It's just basically a miniature handhold version of it for working under a truck, and I swear, any pit crew in desert racing, call KC Highlights, call Jim Connor, order these. You need them for the night races. I'm telling you, you can't live without them. They are great. Next product spotlight we've got is from a company that's the official sunglasses provider of the Down and Dirty Off-Road Show. They're based out of Hawaii, and they're called Isri Optics. It's a new line of sunglasses. Their goal was to put out a high-quality product equal to the name brands, and they're doing it at a price point about 25%, total 25% of what the major manufacturers are. Their first line of glasses is called the Classic. They run $22 a pair. They're available on IsriOptics.com. And what makes these special is there's a million different combinations. They're totally 100% custom. They've got different colors frames, different colors of arms, and different colors of lenses. And you can kind of pick and choose what you want. You can design them there on their website. It's really cool. You can have different color arms, different color frame, and different lenses. You can go just your traditional black arms, black frame, and smoke lenses. You can do anything. You can go as wild as you want. You know, you can go hot pink if you want, lime green, like a laser blue color. They've got it all. So it's pretty cool just to go on their website and fool around and see what kind of crazy sunglasses you can design. We've got a couple of pairs here. They're awesome. Official sunglasses provider of the Down and Dirty Radio Show. We will have the pairs on hand at the Parker 425 pre-race party sponsored by Azunia Tequila at the Cantina. Stop by. I'll show you the pairs. You can try them on. And then you can go online and order some pairs from Isri Optics. That's IsriOptics.com. All right, next up, we've got a Johnny Campbell Dakar interview. Now, we're not going to have him live on this show, which would be amazing. I may actually have to look into that. But he did an interview with RaceDesert.com, and it's about a 10-minute interview, and it talks about his Dakar experience and riding with Robbie Gordon. And it really is just an amazing, amazing interview. I mean, Johnny Campbell is a legend. He's an off-road Hall of Famer. I mean, I can't say more about the guy. The things he's done for off-road racing, the wins, just everything. Just a tremendous athlete, a tremendous motorcycle rider. And then to get into the co-driver seat with Robbie Gordon at Dakar. And he said it was only the second race car he's ever ridden in, the other being with his brother in a Class 1. You know, it just about the experience and what he learned from it. And my guess is, I would say, I'm 99% sure that Johnny Campbell and Robbie Gordon will team up again for next year's Dakar. I mean, I'll leave that slight chance, you know, that they might. But I think both of them, everything I've read and heard, they had a tremendous time. They both have mutual respect for each other. I think it will it'll be Robbie and Johnny round two next year. What do you think, Trent?
Oh, I definitely agree. And as you said from the interview, he was basically learning on the fly. I call it Throne of the Wolves is what I typically call it. But he was learning on the fly. And it really, he says, took him making a mistake in the navigation to actually learn from it and better himself. He recalls something on the very first stage that he called out that there was a ditch coming up and they had already passed that. And it was something that they were able to laugh about on the first stage and really make them bond together better, learn from it, and really improve their communication amongst each other in the vehicle. Definitely something when you're spending 2 weeks in a race vehicle side by side with the same person, you definitely have to communicate well and have that camaraderie amongst each other to really have success. And we definitely saw that by them winning the three stages they did. Johnny said winning a Dakar stage was definitely the pinnacle for him, other than heading down one of the last sand dunes coming into the finish at 135 mile an hour, just pegged. He said it's definitely a enjoyment, and he had a blast doing it, and we'll definitely look forward to having Dakar in his future.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up, we've got a press release from Race Tech Seats. We don't normally cover every press release that comes across the internet just because there's so many of them and so many products, and some are similar to others. But I got this one this week, and I thought it deserved a mention on here. Race Tech Seats, they're based out of New Zealand. They've been involved in the V8 Supercar Championship down there in Australia. Which also races in New Zealand. They developed a new competition seat that's aimed towards off-road racing and rally, really. And this seat is amazing to look at. It really is. It's developed for competition use, and it was developed with a safety-conscious racer in mind. There's two sizes available. There's the regular standard, and then there's a wide and tall version, which is for those of you with a little bit wider rear end, and I traditionally fall into that category as well, just because I'm a bigger guy. But hey, they're Hans compatible. They've got a squared shoulder design. They've got the shoulder plates that come around and kind of wrap around you with like the traditional rally seats. They're Hans compatible. And it's also got a cooling ducting. There's cool air ducting, a tube that runs down the back of the seat for a lower back cooling setup. Basically, what that means, if you got a Parker pumper and you run the twin tubes off of it, you can actually take one and blow it into your helmet, and you can hook the second tube into the back of the seat, and it'll actually cool your back during a race. I think that's, I mean, it's unreal, and why somebody hasn't thought of that before, I have no idea. There's, I mean, all kinds of features in here, you know, special energy absorbing foam, you know, in the base. A lot of these suspension seats just use, you know, generic foam, and it gets to be really worn down and hurt after a while. But a really amazing seat, and it's also got an additional wrap around your head that looks more like a NASCAR type of seat, where you get the extra head support side to side, and just really an amazing seat. You can check it out on their website, racetechseatsna.com. Check them out. I've been in contact with the company. Hopefully we can get one here and maybe do a full-blown product spotlight on it. But in the meantime, if you're in the need for some new seats for your pre-runners or your race cars, give them a shout. They look like an amazing seat. Next up, we've got a couple of announcements. We've got the Dirt Theater at Parker, Arizona, the 425, this coming up, not this weekend, the following weekend. Dirt Theater is going to be there. I believe it's going to be Friday, Saturday night, maybe, and I think it's maybe Thursday night, too. They're giving away free Azunia tequila. I know Monster Energy is co-sponsoring it. I don't know what Monster's giving out. Probably energy drinks for the kids. Not that your kids need energy drinks, but I'm sure they're giving out energy drinks for the kids. I think in order to get the free tequila vouchers, you've got to go on Mad Media's Facebook page, like Azunia tequila. They'll give you a certificate to print out. You go to the Dirt Theater that's going to be showing all these cool off-road videos. They'll give you a free Azunia margarita. While you're there, if you make a donation to Sammy the Bull, they will give you an additional margarita while you're there, which leads us into our Sammy the Bull announcement. He's a racer, a great racer. He's trying to put together a program for the Mint 400 to help fight colorectal cancer. He's got a very close friend that it's affected. He's putting together a heck of a program. You can visit the website at teamtracy.org, TEAMTRACIE.org, teamtracy.org, and you can find out all the information on what he's doing to help fight cancer and make donations and find out more about the Dirt Theater and everything that's going on. Definitely worth it. It's a great cause. Please check it out and go there. The Mint 400 Mad Media DVDs, there's still some available. They're shipping them out in bunches. If you don't know about the program, we've mentioned it quite a few times on air so far. Go to Mad Media's Facebook page, like it. Go to General Tire's Facebook page, like it. And you got to go to, what else is it? I can't even remember at this point. Oh, the Mint 400 Facebook page and like it. If you do that and go to Mad Media, they've got a web page set up on their website. Give them your address. They will send you a free copy of the Mint 400 that aired on Fuel TV. So definitely worth doing. I mean, it doesn't cost you a thing, just three clicks and you get a free DVD. So need to hit the internet now and do it. The Rick Huseman Memorial shirts actually just got reduced in price. The crew chief shirts were $100. They got reduced to $69.99. Amazing crew chief shirts from Impact Racing. They're all sublimated, really tricked, down to $69. Definitely worth picking up. The traditional shirts are $25. Very cool designs front and back. All proceeds go to the Rick Huseman Memorial Fund. Please pick one of these shirts up. I'm ordering mine this week. You need to pick it up and support the Rick Huseman Fund. Tragic accident. He's got a young son that's growing up. This money is going to be used for his son to go to college and things like that. Please make a donation. You get a free T-shirt. You know, and it's just a good cause. Other announcement, the Off-Road Swap Meet, end of February. It's at the Casino Morongo in Cabazon, California, there by the big dinosaurs. Never been to the Off-Road Swap Meet before. It's a great event, a lot of fun. Get there early, get the night, but that's when the deals start. And if they say the thing starts at 5 in the morning, I'd be there at 3 because somebody's going to beat you to it, and all the deals go fast. But if you're looking for race car parts for either a pre-runner or to sell or anything, definitely check out the Off-Road Swap Meet. lots of deals to be had. Or, and if you need more information, Kurt LeDuc, he's got all his contact information up on Race Desert, and you know, you can give him a call or shoot him an email, and he'll get you more information on pricing for setting up booths and things like that. But good event, check it out. Next up, Trent, if anybody didn't know, he's our resident UTV expert. He's in the UTV business. He just recently, his business got in the RZR 4 XP900. It's a brand new model they just launched, and I think they're just hitting grounds in the past week here, you know, here in the States. He's going to have a full review. He's been able to sit in it, drive it, feel it, check it out, and he's going to hit you up with a review right now.
Yes, I definitely am. The RZR 4 XP900, very interesting concept. Polaris is always upping the stepping up their game, up in the ante. Seems like as soon as another company comes out with something, even if it's outdated, Polaris ups the ante again and comes out, because I know Kawasaki just came out with their Carex 4. Now Polaris has already came out with their XP 900 four-seat. But in comparison, it's the same chassis as the two-seat XP 900, but it is stretched to accommodate two extra seats, similar to the RZR 4 that we all know of. Biggest concern people had is the 900cc 88 horsepower engine. Very phenomenal. Topped out at 78, 79 mile an hour from the factory. And a lot of people had concern that the added weight of the four seat would steal some of that power away, similar to what occurred with the RZR S to the RZR 4. I'm not sure what changes Polaris made, but it definitely doesn't have the power loss that the RZR 4 800 does. I've had it up over 60 mile an hour uphill. Just a phenomenal product all the way around. 14 inches of wheel travel up front, 14 in the rear with their trailing arm suspension. Very good product. A couple of concerns people had was they do have a non-power steering model. That's actually the model I was able to ride in and drive. One thing that separates the RZR models from any other side-by-side is that they are rear engine. And one thing that's nice is having that rear engine so far back. The steering on this RZR 4 was actually very easy to drive. Definitely something you could sell just driving around a parking lot. Haven't had a chance to see their power steering model yet, but I do know Polaris has the best power steering on the market right now for any sort of ATV or UTV product. So it's definitely something to be excited for. Other than that, I do know they made some changes to the floorboards of it. Polaris is known for, they've got basically a little drop-down piece in the floorboard for your gas pedal foot, and it's definitely a much more comfortable feel. I don't have any ankle cramping, anything like that, so they made some slight adjustments compared to the XP900, but very comfortable, very strategic decisions they've changed, and definitely an all-around great product. Like I said, it doesn't have any power loss with added four-seat weight. Definitely comfortable for a six-foot-tall guy to ride in the rear two seats. And I think Polaris hit it out of the park again with a RZR 4 XP. Definitely something that I think we'll see in off-road racing with the longer wheelbase to change the spectrum of how things handle. I think the longer wheelbase will definitely help out with that. It should be a short time, and we'll see a lot of them out there. I know Jagged X has a program where you can bring them a RZR 4 XP, and I believe it's $10,000 additional, or and they'll convert it to a race ready four seat, best in the desert, legal UTV to race. So. Should be interesting to see what happens. And as soon as we get a chance to test drive one with power steering, I'm sure I'll be back with more information.
I got a quick question for you, Trent. These things, you know, it's funny. People buy these things, and the first thing they do three things. You go and you get your doors, because nobody wants to roll one of those things over without doors, and they don't come with doors. And let's face it, those nets are garbage. They don't have a windshield in them, so everybody has to put the half windshield in. And they don't have a roof, so everybody gets a roof and puts it on. When's Polaris going to start putting these on, that stuff as like a package from the factory? I mean, I know even at your Polaris dealership, that's the first thing you guys do is add those three things.
Definitely. It's always something we do. We have the roof, windshield, and doors on display. One thing that I'm not sure a lot of people realize, Polaris just came out with their own type doors for UTVs. Right now they've got just the Razor doors, which fit on the Razor 570, 800, Razor S, or the XP900. Same cage work. It's a universal door that will fit on any of those Razor models. Retails for, I believe, $599. So definitely a price point sell. Beats the Pro Armor doors that are definitely most popular. Everyone knows about Pro Armor, what they offer, because I believe those run $649. I'm sure Polaris will be coming out with Razor 4 doors here shortly. Not sure when they'll offer a package for it, but I know it's something that I'm sure is on their radar. So it should be interesting to see. I know they've got some things in the work for graphics kits for their doors they have out now. A lot of different things going on. But as far as a specific time or date when that'll be available as a package, I think you'd have to talk with your Polaris dealer on getting some sort of price break by getting all three items.
Here's the question, staying with the UTV thing, theme of things. Your company, you guys also are a Honda dealer. Now, everybody knows Honda. Honda makes the best products hands down in the world. I'm sorry, I'm a little biased, but, you know, they do. They've got a track record of just, you know, putting out phenomenal product. It took them forever to get into the jet ski market, and now the products they're putting out are second to none. I mean, they're always slow to get into markets when they arrive, but they, you know, when they do, they come in full force, and, you know, they do have the big red out, Honda does. What are your guesses, Trent, when Honda's going to bring a UTV into the market that, you know, just crushes everything?
I'd be very excited to see them bring something into the market. Everyone knows the problems they had with their three-wheelers. Everyone knows the problems Yamaha experienced when the Rhino first came out with lawsuits and everything. And I think that's why Honda's been so tentative to get into the side-by-side market. But as we all know, as soon as they come into the market, I'm sure it'll be full force. It's just one of those things, as I've said, Polaris keeps upping the ante, and Kawasaki just came out with their new Terex 4, and now it's already outdated because Polaris came back out with this 4-seat 900 that does well over 70 mile an hour from the factory. Definitely be something interesting to see when Honda comes into the market as far as any ETA, or if I know anything's in the groundwork, I don't know. But I do know anytime they've shown a real interest, they've come in full force. Right now, to me, with the big red out, it just doesn't seem like they've got that interest yet. Not sure if they're still tentative over the Rhino lawsuits and just not sure if they're wanting to get in. But I do know the UTV industry is blowing up. I mean, we sell 2-to-1 easily UTVs and side-by-sides over ATVs now. Sport quad sales are almost obsolete anymore, which is very surprisingly to me, but I'm sure they'll be in the market just because of how much it's blown up in the past few years.
Yeah, they've got to. I would, you know, I it's just kind of amazing to me they haven't yet. It's like they threw the Big Red out there, and it was just like, okay, we've got something out there, but Big Red's not a sport machine. It's, you know, it's something you use to do utility chores and stuff like that. I mean, it's nothing you want to go out and hammer in the desert or anything. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, what's that?
Oh, I was just definitely agreeing with you on that. A lot of utility vehicles out there, but for the sport UTVs, I mean, there's a few out there, the Terex and Polaris, obviously, and it'll be interesting to see when Honda really steps into the side-by-side industry and seeing what they can do.
Well, and it's kind of amazing to me, you know, Rhinos, everybody, you know, Yamaha, you got to give them props. They were the first to market with one of these UTVs. You know, and the Rhino came out, and it was great. And, you know, out of the box, Rhinos were okay, but they really weren't a sport vehicle. And what has made the Rhino so awesome is the aftermarket companies immediately came in and started making stuff for them and made them performance oriented. But you know, it'll be interesting to see when Yamaha actually puts out a full blown sport UTV, because you know they still got the Rhino, but it's not a sport UTV. You can make it one, but it's not.
I would definitely agree with that, and that's one thing with the technology we have out now. If you're not continuing to change things and update things, I mean, technology will definitely pass you by. And I know Yamaha made their changes from a 660 to 700 fuel injected, different stuff like that. But right now, there's really few companies out there in the UTV market that are at the top of their game right now, and Polaris is definitely one of them. A lot of companies will, I'm sure, have stuff in the groundwork, have the ball rolling on new items. It's just a matter of getting them out there and showing the new items, what they're available to do, what type of power they produce, and different stuff like that.
Cool. Well, I think we're going to start wrapping things up here. We've still got some time if anybody wants to call in, got any questions or rumors or anything. You know, we've got a few minutes to take a caller or two. I just got a Twitter message as we're sitting here. I'm getting Barstow results. Class 1300, Matt Dormek was the winner. That is an official winner according to my source. So cough paint can cough. But anyways, that's a little inside joke here. No, Matt Dormek, 1300 class winner at Barstow. Congratulations, Matt. Like I said before, we will have complete coverage of the Barstow race next week on the show. I also want to plug the Parker 425 again. We will not have an episode next Monday. Our episode next week will be on Wednesday. It will be from 5 to 7 Arizona time. We will be doing a live remote at the Blue Water Resort and Casino Cantina. It'll be from 5 to 7. We're going to be interviewing a lot of racers. I know we're going to interview Casey Folks. I've got a ton of interviews lined up. It should be a good time, fun. Bring the kids. They can meet the racers. There's good food. And most importantly, Azuña Tequila is co-sponsoring the event. Jim's putting on all kinds of specials for margaritas and shooters and stuff like that. It'll be a fun time. Bring the kids, meet the racers, get autographs. I'll have my race truck there. Jim Riley will have his trophy light there. You can look at them, take pictures, have good food. It'll be a good time. So Down and Dirty Radio Show, first live remote, 5 to 7, February 1st, Wednesday, the night before qualifying. We won't have an episode on Monday, so be there. And we will see you then. Thanks a lot, guys.